Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Hoosier Huddle podcast. I'm your host, Sammy Jacobs. Along with us is TJ Inman. And today we'll be taking a step outside of the Big Ten footprint and heading to the Big 12 and Pac-12 to do our preseason previews. But first, we have a message from our friends at SeatGeek. I'd like to take a second to introduce our newest friend from SeatGeek. Let them take the confusion out of your ticket buying experience. Instead of shopping dozens of sites to find the best deal, let SeatGeek do the work for you. Their app scans the web for the best deals to your favorite game, concert, or show, and rates them on a scale of 0 to 10 to let you know if you're getting the best bang for your buck. A green dot marks great deals, a yellow dot good deals, and a red dot not so good deals. Use promo code ACAA at checkout to receive $20 off your first purchase. That's like getting two free beers at the stadium on them. What are you waiting for? The promo code ACAA for $20 off your first purchase. SeatGeek, life's an event. We have the tickets. And with that, we bring in TJ Inman. TJ, welcome back to the show. We're done with Big Ten Media Days. We're heading into our conference previews. How are you?
Very excited. It's gorgeous outside here in Indiana on a Monday evening, and I am definitely ready to begin discussing in earnest the 2019 season. Really, really excited for today's show and our conference preview series that we'll have each week coming up until we get into IU-specific stuff.
Definitely. We're going to start with the Big 12. We're going to go through new coaches, coaching changes in the Big 12, which are a lot in the Big 12, go over our championship games picks, and under the radar team, and then the best game that fans who aren't really fans of Big 12 schools should tune in and watch for national implications. So let's start with the coaching changes in the Big 12. Of course, you got Kansas change coaches. David Beatty is out. Les Miles is in. We'll see what the Mad Hatter can do in Lawrence, Kansas. He's got a tall task in front of him. But, you know, expectations can't be that high after I think they've won seven games the last 5 years or something like that. So David Beatty out, Les Miles in. Also in Kansas, Bill Snyder has retired. Chris Kleiman is in. That's an interesting hire, Chris Kleiman from North Dakota State. That brings 73 wins and single-digit losses to Manhattan, and we'll see how that goes. We've seen Kansas State without Bill Snyder before, and it's been a total disaster. So we'll see. Texas Tech also is changing coaches. Cliff Kingsbury is out. He's in the NFL with Arizona. In is Matt Wells from Utah State. And then another surprising one was Dana Holgorsen leaving West Virginia to take the job at Houston. But West Virginia brings in Neil Brown, who was formerly at Troy. Any of those coaching changes really stand out to you, TJ?
I think they're all interesting. Of the four, Texas Tech bringing in Matt Wells was probably the most conventional move. Wells had pretty good success at Utah State, but I don't think was anything you would consider kind of a top-tier candidate for any of the elite jobs that opened up. But Texas Tech, I think, was a logical landing spot for him, and I think it was a logical move for Texas Tech. I don't know how high the ceiling is for that one, but I would describe that one as solid and sensible. West Virginia bringing in Neil Brown, I think, is very interesting. Dana Holgorsen, while I think he did a good job at West Virginia, it does kind of feel like he sort of beat the mob out of town, if you will. I would not have been surprised if another, you know, maybe 2 years from now, if West Virginia continued on the same track that they were on, if Dana Holgorsen didn't find himself on some kind of hot seat list, as the Mountaineer faithful kind of lost faith that he could get them above what they were. You know, he'd raised it to a certain level, and it seems as if they'd plateaued. And when you plateau, typically you don't last all that much longer. Kansas, look, I don't think Les Miles is going to win big there. However, I completely understand why Kansas made the move to hire Les Miles. His staff hires, to me, were underwhelming, and I don't really see that being a situation where he's going to be able to find success, but, you know, we'll see. I think that the one for me, Chris Kleiman, reminds me a lot of Lance Leopold going to Buffalo, a guy that moves up from a lower level, and I think it might take him a couple of years to find success and find a winning formula in Manhattan. But it would not surprise me at all to see have him winning, you know, 8 games a year there at Kansas State, which is not an easy thing to do. I do think, you know, you mentioned the previous regime before Bill Snyder, Ron Prince. I do think that Kleiman much more qualified for that position than Prince was when he took over, and I think it will go better than that. I don't see any of those hires changing the power structure in the Big 12 anytime soon, though.
I agree. Definitely with Kansas State. West Virginia had their shot last year. I think Neil Brown's a great fit there as well. They kind of blew their shot. They had a senior quarterback who is Will Grier, who is awesome. So, yeah, you're right. He beat the posse out of town. But let's go. What storyline stick out to you in the Big 12 this year? Besides Les Miles coming in, obviously Oklahoma and Texas. You know, after last year's Sugar Bowl, Texas is back. But they've also declared themselves back and then gone and lost season openers to Maryland. You know, there's clearly a top, I would say a top four with Oklahoma, Texas, Iowa State, and Oklahoma State. But those top two are in their own category. But I think any of those four have a shot at it. And I'll get to my under-the-radar team here later. What are your championship predictions?
Well, I'll mention a couple of the storylines that jump out to me. I mean, Oklahoma going for a third straight Heisman Trophy winner, I don't see that happening. I don't think that Jalen Hurts is on that level. Despite his success with Alabama, I don't think he's going to win the third straight Heisman Trophy for Oklahoma. But, you know, it's impossible to sit here and predict that he won't have a prolific season under that offensive coaching staff that they have. And then can Alex Grinch, their new defensive coordinator that Lincoln Riley went out and got, can Alex Grinch turn that defense from, I would say, at best average? Can he turn them into a good unit? If he can, there's no reason for Oklahoma to not be considered a national title threat. Once again, you know, I have my doubts about whether or not that can happen in year one. And it would not surprise me at all to see the highly touted quarterback Spencer Rattler kind of take the reins, if you will, at some point in the season, because Jalen Hurts struggles to throw the deep ball, and you have to be able to do that in Lincoln Riley's offense. His deep ball accuracy is definitely not a strength for him, and they've got the receivers to where that's what they're going to want to do on offense. So I'm kind of interested to see how Lincoln Riley adapts his offense, to the talents of Jalen Hurts, and whether or not Jalen Hurts can adapt his game to what is expected of him under Lincoln Riley. If he cannot, then I do think that there's a chance for someone to step up and knock off the Sooners. But the game that jumps out to me the most as I look at this, right? I'm sorry, we're doing conference championship predictions first. I'm going to go Oklahoma over Iowa State. I do think that the Sooners have enough firepower to get it done. Iowa State, I love Matt Campbell. I really think that they've got the best defense in this conference. really, really like both sides of their line of scrimmage. I think their offensive line is really good. Their defensive line's stout. They've got a lot of depth on the defensive side of the ball as well. The only thing the Cyclones really need is for a couple of playmakers to emerge and step up, and I do have faith in Matt Campbell to find those guys. Brock Purdy is a really good quarterback. There's quite a few good quarterbacks in the Big 12. Purdy's one of them. So I'm going to take the Cyclones to get that second spot and find themselves in the Big 12 title game against Oklahoma. However, I think the Sooners beat them in the regular season and in the Big 12 title game to come out as champions.
Those are two good storylines, and our championship picks differ. My storyline is going to be Texas. We'll know in week two if Texas is back or not when they host LSU. It's
what a game.
There's so much hype around. It's going to be a great game. It's on campus. I love that. I've been on Twitter saying that, but it's one of these games where if Texas wins that can vault them into the playoff discussion, vault them to the top of the Big 12, give them a lot of confidence going forward. So Texas is my big talking point. Are they back? Are they not back? Is it going to be a quarter-by-quarter thing, a drive-by-drive thing? It's something to keep an eye on, and it's at the very least, it's entertaining. But my championship picks, I'm going Oklahoma, Texas. It's going to be a rematch of the Red River rivalry. They meet early in the season. They're going to meet up late in the season. I just don't think Iowa State has the offensive firepower to keep up with teams of the Big 12 consistently. They lose David Montgomery. They do bring back Brock Purdy, but you got to be able to score points as well as play a little bit of defense, which they can. They're a very good defense, but they need to score points and outscore people as well. And I don't think that they could do that. They're probably going to trip up at Oklahoma. They host Texas late in the year, but there's also, you know, they have an early season matchup with Iowa where you'll get to see what this team is about. And then, going to TCU is tough. Going to Oklahoma State, going to Tech, they have to go to West Virginia, go to Texas Tech, play at Oklahoma, end the year at Kansas State. And Baylor, they traveled to Baylor. Baylor's, improved. So I think Iowa State gets tripped up more than once in the Big 12, and they just don't get over that hump. They're a good team. Their defense is going to carry them, but they need – if they can find some life on offense, some explosive plays on offense, maybe you'll be right, TJ, and they'll find themselves in a Big 12 championship game. Moving on to the Pac-12. There's only one coaching change in the Pac-12 is Mike McIntyre is out at Colorado. Mel Tucker is in. The Pac-12, it's going to be interesting, and it's always interesting with Pac-12 after dark. This is a conference, they seem to shoot themselves in the foot all the time. And they've missed the playoff a couple years in a row now. Washington's only made it once. They got hammered by Alabama and Atlanta. Just things aren't set up well for the old Pac-12. 12 here to be successful on a national level in terms of the playoff games, unless they're playing in the Rose Bowl or the Fiesta Bowl, they have to travel east and play like a de facto home game against one of these Eastern teams. Their games are always late at night. They play Friday night conference games, which I enjoy. Anytime you can put on a good football game when nothing else is on, I'm fine with that. But as far as getting eyeballs, national eyeballs and voters and all those things, it's just tough. I think there's going to be some changing of the guard a little bit. USC has fallen off. That's, a storyline. My storyline to watch is what's going to happen to USC. They kind of held serve with Clay Helton. Were they waiting to fire him this year so that they have a shot at Urban Meyer? clearly he's what he's done at USC is not good enough for the USC brand, but somehow he still has a job. And is it they're just hanging on to him till something better comes along? And there really wasn't anything that much better on the market without taking a huge risk for USC. So do they, if they struggle, do they make a change and go hard after Urban Meyer, who's now retired twice, and will, I guarantee he'll coach again. So
yep.
USC is a team to keep an eye on. What's your storyline to watch in the Big 12? Or, sorry, Pac-12.
I think USC is certainly the one to look at. I would find it shocking if Clay Helton has his job, let's say January 1st. I would be absolutely stunned. I just don't think that there's enough there that's going to keep people happy. I mean, realistically, what's it going to take for him to keep his job even one more season? Maybe 10 wins? I mean, and if you look at that schedule, I don't see 10 wins there. I really don't. So,
no, they're projected by Athlon at 6.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that might be a little bit harsh, but anything above 7, maybe getting to 8 wins, would be a real positive. However, you're at USC, and regardless of what might be a realistic positive, that's not going to be good enough. Beyond that, I think two teams that, for me, had first-year coaches last year that did not have good seasons at all, however, have some pieces in place that would suggest one of them might be poised for a bounce back and possibly more than that. Talking about UCLA with Chip Kelly and Arizona with Kevin Sumlin. So I think that one of those two will be able to surprise some this year. The other one for me that's a storyline, and they are my pick as a conference champion, is going to be the Utah Utes. I think that Kyle Whittingham is one of the best coaches in the country, and I think Utah has all the pieces in place for a tremendous season. And in my opinion, this is going to be their first trip that we've seen out of the Pac-12 to the Rose Bowl. I'm a huge, huge proponent of what Utah is bringing to the table this year. So that's my storyline to watch is, can Utah get to the top of the Pac-12 for the first time?
Yeah, and if there was a way to put your division champion as a team under the radar, I think Utah would also fit, fit under that. Let's go championship picks. TJ, you already gave Utah. Who is representing the Pac-12 North?
Sure. Yep, I'm going to go run back the Pac-12 title from last year, which if Utah's quarterback had been healthy in that game, I think the Utah would have beaten Washington last year. I think they get another crack at it this season, and I'm going to take the Utes this year to knock off the Huskies in the Pac-12 title game. Last year's game was a really, really ugly, ugly affair that should have, to the playoff committee, in my opinion, it should have sent off some alarm bells. It did not, and Washington got in the playoff, which is fine. I mean, they earned it. And, of course, got baptized by the Alabama Fire. I do think that Utah, if they can stay healthy and have a healthy offense, I think that we will see their elite defense matched up with what I think is going to be a better offense this season, and we'll see Utah representing the Pac-12. I don't think that they make the playoff, but I do think that they get to the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, I have Utah as well representing the South. It's just everything's coming together for them. The roster's probably the best they've had in a while. Then the Pac-12 South is just – there's a lot of mediocrity. UCLA is down. USC's down. You don't really know what you have in Arizona State, Arizona, and then Colorado is coming in with the new coach. And so you'd think that they would take a step back from where they were a year ago. So their schedule lines up, you know, outside of a trip to USC and Washington, the schedule is very manageable. You get Washington State at home. You get Arizona State at home. You get Colorado at home. You do have to go to BYU to start the year as part of the Holy War. But, you know, everything, as long as they stay healthy and Tyler Huntley is healthy, then they should be able to win that division pretty handily. In the North, I'm going to go a little different. I like Oregon over Washington, which is a little bit of an upset.
Yeah.
Oregon does travel to Washington on October 19th. But I'm going to go with the veteran quarterback, Justin Herbert, and take the Oregon Ducks. You know, Mario Cristobal had that team playing well. They showed some defensive guts against Michigan State, although Michigan State's offense was awful at the end of last year. They held them to 6 points in the Red Box Bowl, ended the year on a high note with 9 wins. Their schedule, you'll get a very good look at Oregon early in the year when they play Auburn up in Arlington to start the year. They do have to go to Stanford. They do have to go to Washington. They do have to go to USC and Arizona State at the end of the year. Going to the desert is always tough. It's dry. It's hot. And teams always seem to wilt, especially from the Pacific Northwest. But I like Justin Herbert. They bring back three wide receivers as well. Their entire offensive line is back. And as well as C.J. Verdell, who was a 1,000-yard rusher last year, Travis Dye, nearly 1,000 yards, 739 in a backup role. This offense is going to be really, really good this year. And I think it's time that things change a little bit. Washington's breaking in a new quarterback, and this is the year Oregon gets him and returns Oregon to the top of the Pac-12 North. And then I to pick a winner, it's gonna be a good game. You're gonna get those red Utah uniforms and the green Oregon uniform. Should be a great scene on TV. But you know what? I'm gonna wimp out and pass. But I'll probably take Utah in that game. Their defense is so athletic. Their defensive line is so good. They have the tools to shut down Oregon in that Pac-12 championship game. So I'll take Utah as well, go in the Rose Bowl. I do think that they have an outside shot at the playoff as well. They need to – their schedule is going to bite them in terms of schedule strength in the Pac-12. You don't really play –
Yeah, I think they'd have to go unbeaten.
You'd have to go 13-0. You have to win your non-conference games pretty convincingly. Since, you know, it's BYU, at BYU, and then Northern Illinois, Idaho State, and that's it. They do play 9 conference games. USC doesn't carry the pizzazz anymore. And that's about it outside of Washington. If you beat Washington, if they end up playing Washington again in the Pac-12 championship game and you beat them twice convincingly, Maybe you have a shot at 12-1, but that one loss is going to be a bad loss. So it's a long shot for the Pac-12.
Yeah, I think that what they'd be rooting for would be Oregon to beat Auburn in that first weekend. That's a huge game for the Pac-12. They really need that one. They need Oregon to take down Auburn, and then after that, I feel like Utah would need to see Oregon in the Pac-12 title game. So maybe, you know, Washington has a really good year, but comes up just short. Oregon beats them out for that Pac-12 North title so that Utah would get the bump of playing Oregon, who would have a win over Auburn. And then if they could beat Oregon at that point, you know, I think that you could really start to make a case for Utah at that point. But with that schedule, you're right. They are going to they're going to need some help. They're going to have to go unbeaten, and then they'll need a little bit of help from, you know, the ACC Big Ten, SEC, and Big 12, because I think out of the five conferences, it seems like you could really make a case that the Pac-12, if it were Utah representing them as the potential college football playoff team, they would need the most help to make a case. Now, lots of variables there and things could change, but just looking at a preseason, I think Utah is the best team that they have to offer, and I think the Utah's schedule sets up the best, so I'm putting them ahead of the pack, but that would not bode well for their college football playoff chances necessarily. Now, I don't think Utah would be all that upset if this season resulted in their schedule, meaning that they missed the college football playoff, but get to go to the Rose Bowl. I don't think their fans would be too upset about that at all.
Yeah, it's more of the Pac-12 as a whole needing some momentum going into college football playoff, and Oregon, I think, has a better chance at that due to their schedule, but Utah probably has the better team on paper. It's what is the Pac-12, if they're shut out of the playoff again, what is the Pac-12, where do they stand in terms of what do they have to change in order to be in the legitimately in the conversation, which they haven't been for the college football playoff in the future?
They would have to really ask some hard questions. I do wonder, if you look at recruiting rankings, they don't – it's not poor recruiting at all, but they are not recruiting as a whole on the level of the elite teams in the country. Like, if you're looking at the top of the conference in the Pac-12, Utah, Oregon, Washington, those teams are not recruiting as well as the elite teams in the ACC, the SEC, and the Big Ten. Their recruiting rankings would bear that out. And when those teams are on the field together, that shows up. Washington and Oregon and Utah, if you will, those are very, very good programs. However, when you are nitpicking at them and talking about making the college football playoff as one of the top four teams in the country, we have seen them on the field with those teams in key marquee, non-conference games, like Oregon will have a shot at against Auburn. They have to start winning some of those games because so far they've been unable to do so. And I think that really sticks in the minds of the college football playoff committee. So they're going to have to start winning at least a couple of those games to change that image and that perception of things. Failure to do so and more losses in those games, I think, is just going to deepen that perception and make it all the harder for them to change it.
Yeah, it's kind of like what the Big Ten did. You got to win some of these non-conference games. You got to win more than a couple bowls over a two-year period and get shut out. You got to start winning big games. And that Oregon Auburn matchup is huge. It was huge last year with Washington and Auburn beat them. And that kind of set the tone for the Pac-12 last year. On a national perspective.
And then Auburn,
TJ, who is,
and then Auburn turns out was not great, and that matters too. Like, Auburn goes on to be just okay. They were not an elite team they sure looked like one against Purdue in their bowl game, but Auburn did not have an amazing year. They were just good. They weren't great. And so the fact that Washington, who turns out to be your conference's best team, loses to Auburn. Now, would that have been different if they had played in January? Yeah, I think that that's very possible. But it doesn't matter because the college football committee looks at that and sees, Auburn, who goes on to have an okay year in the SEC, beat you. Washington, it beat you. And that matters in the eyes of the committee, I think, and in the eyes of the college football world. You have to make those types of comparisons, especially when we have an on-field result, albeit one that's early in the season, that's all we have in college football is those short 12, 13 game, you know, seasons to judge things on. So how you play in those non-conference games as a conference, it really does end up mattering. I mean, it doesn't for like in Indiana. I mean, hell, what Ohio State or Michigan does in the non-conference is not going to have an impact on how IU season goes or is viewed. It doesn't matter. But for the teams that are going to be potentially vying for those college football playoff spots, what a team like Indiana or what a team like Michigan State or, you know, somebody else on your schedule, what they do does end up mattering. And for Washington or Utah or Oregon, that ends up coming into play. So they need for that conference and their conference mates to stand out and win the games that they need to win in the non-conference schedule.
Yeah, and if you look at these early season Pac-12 non-conference games, you have Arizona gets Texas Tech at home. They also have to travel to Hawaii in the first 3 weeks. Arizona State has to go to Michigan State. That's a big game. California plays at Ole Miss. That's an important game. Colorado gets Colorado State and Nebraska to open the season. Oregon, we talked about, has Auburn. Oregon State has Oklahoma State at home to open the season. That's a game that they need to, you know, be competitive in. Stanford has a chance. They open the season at home against Northwestern, Big Ten West defending champions. They end the year with Notre Dame at home, who could be in the potential for a playoff talk there. UCLA going to Cincinnati. Yes, and they do have Central Florida as well. So those are three big – Stanford probably carries the most water in terms of conference pride going to those games. They could easily go 0-3 in those games. Yeah. Probably easier to go 0-3 than 3-0. And then moving to UCLA.
I don't love Stanford this year, so.
Yeah. And then UCLA opens at Cincinnati. Cincinnati was very, very good last year. They have high expectations this year. That's a Thursday night opener as well. That's going to be one of these national games that everybody has their eyes on. When you lose that, it's how are you a Power 5 team that goes down to an AAC team and loses? USC, of course, has Notre Dame in the goes to Notre Dame in the middle of the year. They do host Fresno State to start the year. They do travel to BYU as well, which is a tough place to play. But if Fresno State plays like they did last year, now there's a lot of changes that went on at Fresno State, as well as we know with Kalen DeBoer coming to IU. That's a big, important game as well. We went through Utah. Washington has Eastern Washington, Hawaii, and at BYU. And then Washington State, New Mexico State, Northern Colorado. And then they go to Houston. They play in NRG Stadium, NFL Stadium. That's a game that all eyes will be on as well. You gotta start winning some of these games. You can't lose to Group of Five teams, and all three of these Group of Five teams from the AAC can come and kick your butt at any time as well in UCF. Houston and Cincinnati all on the road, and it's just that's tough scheduling. So we'll see what the Pac-12 does. TJ, who is your under the radar team for the Pac-12?
Well, it's tough to pick one, but I'm so high on Utah that I don't consider them under the radar for myself. I went with Arizona, and I don't think they're going to be great. However, I'm going to look very closely at them, and I don't feel like anybody is talking about them. I feel that there's room in the South for them to jump up to that second slot in the South because the teams are so jumbled for Utah, in my opinion. And I think they have two really, really good players in their backfield that if they can figure out how to utilize them correctly, could make for a really explosive offense. Khalil Tate, the quarterback, and J.J. Taylor, the running back. you know, not a lot of depth to this team. And I don't think that Kevin Sumlin's that great as a coach, but I'm really interested to see, because there's, in my opinion, two elite players in Khalil Tate and J.J. Taylor that, if they can be utilized, I think Arizona has enough with those two and some other, you know, decent players to make a run at that second slot in the Pac-12 South. I think that Arizona State is probably who I would choose second in the South right now, but it would not shock me to see Arizona kind of put things together and have a really good senior season under Khalil Tate. Certainly can't be any worse than what it was last year. Another team for me to keep an eye on is going to be also in the South, mainly because I think there's just more upward mobility in that division. But UCLA, you know, they really did start to play better at the end of last season. And I think that they found a quarterback in Dorian Thompson-Robinson. I think that they return enough offensively. Plus, it's year two under Chip Kelly. I think you could see quite an improvement in the Bruins. However, you mentioned that game, that season opener at Cincinnati, followed up by San Diego State, followed up by Oklahoma. That's another one where you very easily could find yourself 0-3. They lost to Cincinnati last year, so it would not be at all shocking to see them go to Cincinnati and lose. So if you're 0-3, do the players start to really question, you know, what exactly are we doing here, and kind of pack it in and begin looking at alternate places to play college ball. You could see that scenario play out, or they could get an early win or two that really jumpstarts things for them and makes their game against Oklahoma maybe a tricky one for the Sooners. So I think those two are ones that I'm going to really be keeping an eye on.
Yeah, I had Arizona. I thought I was being clever with that pick, but clearly I wasn't. Arizona, it's a Pac-12 South. It's wide open outside of Utah being the favorite. Khalil Tate is, I think he's finally healthy. You had a disaster of the year to start out with Kevin Sumlin last year. This staff has their feet underneath them. He's too talented to go 5-7 again. And they had blown a big lead against Arizona State to miss out on a bowl game as well at the end of the year. So Arizona is my under-the-radar team to pick. I don't think you could put UCLA and Chip Kelly under the radar, just like you can't put USC in Los Angeles under the radar. Those teams are too – the spotlight is on them at all times, you know, for football with Chip Kelly there, and then with the Urban Meyer stuff that is inevitably going to come around USC once Clay Helton loses a game or two games or three games or seven games like he did last year. So it's, you know, Arizona State could fall into that too with Herm Edwards, but you had a guy who burst onto the scene as a sophomore, entered his junior year as everybody's favorite as a Heisman for the Heisman Trophy, stunk, and now it's kind of a redemption tour. What can you show? You know, what can you show the nation that you have? And I think that, you know, Arizona, it's a place where you can fly under the radar and have it be okay. Nobody's talking, and they're probably just fine with that. And it takes a little bit of the pressure off of Kevin Sumlin and off of Khalil Tate, because expectations were so high last year. And maybe that's what got to them. It was, you know, Kevin Sumlin, such a great coach. He was at Texas A&M. He's going to do great things with Khalil Tate, like he did with Johnny Manziel. And then they just completely fell flat on their face. And now nobody's talking about them, which allows them to kind of go into stealth mode, focus on them, turn off the outside noise, and be successful. So Khalil Tate was appointment television when he was playing a couple of years ago. My hope is that he's appointment television when he's playing this year as well. And that's only going to be good for the Pac-12 is that, Khalil Tate's playing. Let's put him on. You know what? We're going to turn the Arizona game on. And then the Pac-12 gets a few more eyeballs. Kind of like, Clemson's playing. We've got to watch Clemson. They're really good. Jonathan Taylor's playing at Wisconsin. Got to watch Jonathan Taylor. You know, got to watch some of these big individuals play for these teams in conferences on the East Coast and in the South, where the Pac-12 loses out some viewers because they don't really have that star power unless you're a Pac-12 fan and know that. And Khalil Tate can bring that star power back to the Pac-12 with his playmaking. Final thoughts on the Pac-12,
PJ? That's a good point. No, I think you make a good point. They do have some elite players in that conference. And I certainly think that there are, I think, three top-end teams in Washington, Oregon, and Utah. I think a step down after that. But a lot of quality teams, really good depth in the conference. And I think it's a very fun league. And I really enjoy watching, late Pac-12 games or recording them and watching them, Sunday mornings or even Sunday afternoons, catching up on what happens, late at night for us here in the Midwest. I think it's a really fun league. I think they play a good brand of football. They really need to get those non-conference wins to kind of bolster what happens during the regular season.
Yeah, it's for these two conferences, and I lumped them together because they're similar, that they always seem to be that fourth or fifth team in the college playoff discussion. And, the Big 12, they have 10 teams. It's the Big Two. It has been just Oklahoma. And now Texas is coming back. And then the Pac-12, you had Washington for a while. You had Oregon for a while. But there hasn't been any real depth to either conference. And I think they're starting to build that back up now. Texas and Oklahoma are good. I think TCU is my under-the-radar team for the Big 12, by the way. They always follow up a disappointing season with a good season. They come up to play Purdue. It's a game that mm-hmm. Big Ten fans are going to watch. IU fans are probably going to watch just to spite Purdue. But it's, now you got to build some conference depth. Just like the Big Ten West has started to build some conference depth, you need Wisconsin to be better. But you have Iowa and Purdue and, basically the only stinker in that group right now is Illinois. All the rest are – you don't really want to play all the rest of those teams. If you're looking to play somebody from the Big Ten West, if you had to pick and choose, everybody would pick and choose Illinois right now. And maybe Lovey gets that thing rolling and moving in the right direction, and they become a difficult out. And that makes the Big Ten a little bit more difficult to play. But you look at the Big Ten East, and you got a little bit of depth outside of Rutgers falling off a cliff last year. Indiana gives teams a run. Maryland put a heck of a scare into Ohio State last year. They have some good athletes. We'll see what Mike Locksley could do. Michigan. Then you have the Big Four. You have Michigan State, Michigan, Ohio State, and Penn State, who could go toe-to-toe with most people in the country. So, conference depth, especially in these two, this is the reason why I put the Big 12 and the Pac-12 together, is that they're so similar in conference depth where there are one or two teams, maybe now three teams in the Pac-12 that have a legitimate shot to go knock off one of these giants in another conference. And the hope is that you could build depth to where, playing Colorado isn't a pushover, or playing Arizona isn't a pushover, or playing Oregon State isn't a pushover, and they need those bottom teams, to be solid, and that will ultimately help their playoff case. Is that you don't go, you guys played Colorado, Oregon State, Arizona at home. You have to go to Arizona State. Oh, you lost to California, but you beat USC. You know, it's they need to get rid of that stigma and for them for both of these conferences to get in to consistently stop being that argument for the fourth or fifth team in the playoffs. So that's my final thought on the Pac-12 and the Big 12 is just building conference depth. You know, everybody wants to play Kansas. Everybody wants to play Oregon State. Time for those teams to, you know, stop being at the bottom, pick yourselves up, it's time to get to mediocre and then move on from there. And it'll just help your conference a little bit more. Maybe you get a little bit more of a payday with college football playoff things and all that stuff. And TV revenue and eyeballs, because right now if California is playing Oregon State, nobody wants to watch that game. And if Kansas is playing anybody, I don't think anybody wants to watch that game. So these bottom feeders need to elevate themselves to make the conference better, you know, raise the floor. The ceiling's where it's going to be. You have elite teams in Oklahoma, Texas, Washington, Oregon to some standpoint, and Utah. You have your elite teams. The floor needs to be raised up from absolute garbage like Kansas to, you know, getting to the point where, you know, your worst team in the, you know, the conference might be somebody like, you know, like an Indiana team who could consistently go 5-7 or win 6 games. And it's just not a total loss. So that does it for today's podcast. TJ, thank you for joining me. As always, we're going to be going now on a weekly basis. Next week, we are breaking down the ACC and the SEC. So we go from the people who need help to the big, to the kings of college football right now.
Yeah.
So ACC, SEC next week, July 29th. We'll follow that up with a Group of Five preview and then go into the Big Ten West and then finish up with the Big Ten East before getting into our game preview on August 26th. The season is coming up. We're down to 40 days. We're going to be below 40 days tomorrow. So, TJ, thanks for joining us. I'm excited for the college football season, as are you, and have a restful rest of the evening.
Absolutely, yeah. This is a lot of fun, and we certainly look forward to continue bringing that along with all of our IU season preview content on HoosierHuddle.com. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Yep, thank you indeed. Check us out at HoosierHuddle.com. Follow us on Twitter at Hoosier_Huddle. If we've had audio problems, I sincerely apologize. I'm trying to get it figured out. I've bought new equipment. I've changed rooms. I've upgraded Wi-Fi, and none of it seems to work today. I've tried, instead of doing the Direct Connect on there, I have tried calling on my phone, so hopefully it's a little bit better, and we're working as hard as we can to get this fixed for our loyal listeners. So apologize if the audio quality is not where you guys deserve it, but hopefully you keep coming back and listening to the content. We appreciate the feedback, and we'll catch you next week for an SEC-ACC preview. If there's anything that you, the fans, would like us to talk about, please shoot us a DM or tweet at us or give us a shout-out on email or on the site on the comments, and we'll try and touch on those topics as well. Enjoy the rest of the week, and finally it's cooled down, and football will be here before you know it.